Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson. Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Susan Sorensen and Cody Beeson. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk today about what it takes to change somebody's mind or persuade them to do one thing or another with regard to politics today. And the reason I think this is an important subject, I don't like talking about real current events because I like to talk about long-lasting issues that will be relevant 6 years down the road as they are today, like constitutional issues and societal issues that we need to be focusing on for the long game. But right now we're in a very polarized situation in society where individuals don't seem to be persuaded much by what goes on, the rhetoric that's happening in politics, because they either believe that the mainstream media is fake news or gospel. They believe their favorite YouTube host is, you know, saying everything that is right, or anything that they say, they're going to go against it. So, for example, I'm going to start out with some things that I think Trump did very well and why people disagreed with it regardless of how good it was, and things that he does terribly. So one thing that he did really well was the Abraham Accords, and that was to bring the Middle Eastern countries together to have peaceful trade. And this was something that nobody thought he could accomplish. He did. It lasted maybe one 24-hour news cycle and then didn't get much publication after that. And I think that it probably spawned the attacks of October 6th, 7th, and because Iran really didn't want those to happen, and they were just being totally solidified by Saudi Arabia right before or right after the October 7th attacks. And that was a wonderful thing that happened, the Abraham Accords, is that was to normalize relationships in the Middle East. And then another thing was, I think that he really tried to ramp up, well, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but he really tried to ramp up awareness about COVID and the vaccine. Now, there's a lot of people that absolutely hate the vaccine. I hate the implementation of the vaccine. I don't hate the vaccine. I hate the implementation of it, that it was mandated on all federal workers, and pretty much you were a scourge if you didn't take the vaccine in the political view or lens. And he did Operation Warp Speed, which was to get the vaccine going quickly. But the party in power right now, the Biden administration, they're all about the vaccine, but nothing about Trump's support for it. In fact, the Kamala Harris stated several times that she would never take a vaccine that Trump produced or that was promoted by Trump. And I thought that was an interesting thing, because then the Biden-Harris administration required it and mandated it on every federal employee and all the people serving in the armed forces. So it seems to be that Trump can't do anything right in one party's eyes, and that's the Democrats. And also there are never-Trumpers. I think Mitt Romney is one of those that's a never-Trumper. Mitt Romney is somebody that I highly respect. I think he actually serves in politics for the right reasons. But I don't agree with the never-Trump concepts, that he can never give credit where it might be due. What's your take on that, Susan?
I, too, respect Mitt Romney a lot. I think you're right. He's in politics for the right reason. I think there is a lot of division. This might be a hyperbole, but I feel like there's only division. Like, it feels like people are in one camp or the other.
Right. You find very few independents these days.
Right. And those that are kind of, I don't know, in the closet a little bit, maybe.
Why do you think they're in the closet, either one way or the other? And do you think they're more in the closet on the Trump side or more in the closet on the Biden side or Harris side now?
I think a little bit of both. Well, I think rather than what you see as like registered independents being in the closet, I think you see maybe some more registered Republicans that are having a hard time with the Republican agenda that are in the closet, and maybe on the other side as well, some closeted Democrats that are having a hard time with some of the extreme policies coming out of the administrations that are going on.
So, okay, I'm interested. What do you think of the Republican agenda offends more people, or the most people? What's the highest issue that really offends people?
Offends
the Democrats,
liberals,
or people in general that the closet Republicans don't want to put themselves out to get attacked on. And I'll throw out a couple of options here. There's the abortion issue, Roe mm-hmm. v. Wade. There is the gun issue, Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Have I got close?
So you're asking, I'm not sure I understand the question.
The question is, why would anybody who is voting Republican feel embarrassed to let that be known because of the policies and the agenda that the Republican Party is pushing?
Maybe it's not because of the Republican policies. Maybe it's more because of the Republican leadership.
Okay, so Trump.
And the people who he's surrounding himself with.
Okay. I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy. RFK right now is pretty much a unifying figure, if anything, that I've seen. Is there anybody else that he's surrounding himself with that? I mean, there's Tucker Carlson. He's polarizing for sure.
I would say less like nameable individuals uh-huh. and more of the individuals that are just telling him exactly what he would like to hear.
Oh, so the yes men.
The yes men.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what do you think the policies are on the left side that keep people from openly admitting that they're willing to vote for a Harris administration?
Border policies, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
I think that both sides are coming to the agreement that the border is a problem and needs to be addressed. I think that probably the economy is something that somebody that might be a Democrat might want to see a little more money in their own pocket.
So that's a good one to start with. So let's talk about a couple of policies that Kamala Harris did discuss in the only debate that they had and probably will ever have. And that was about giving $25,000 for first-time home buyers, and also forgiving up to $50,000 of student loan debt. That's already a policy, by the way. It's not, whether or not it's constitutional or not is yet to be said or found out, because it already was attempted once. And I don't know what was different the second attempt, but it was found unconstitutional the first time. And then the administration did it again. And They're implementing the policy. It is happening. Like forgiveness, like debt is being wiped away. I received one of these letters. I can't remember where I saw it, because I don't have any student loan debt anymore. Unfortunately, I just paid it all off. But anyway, I did see one of these letters, and it said, you don't need to do anything. We're going to cancel the debt. I think they're going to wipe the record before it gets to the Supreme Court. So even if the Supreme Court says, no, it's unconstitutional, it's like what's done is done.
How nice for you.
For having paid off student debt? Yeah, well, it took me 10 years.
We're still working on ours.
Yes, exactly. And that's the point. And I guess let's start there. What do you think about either of those two issues, the $25,000 of first-time homebuyer money or $50,000 of student loan forgiveness? Pick one.
Well, let me preface this by saying that I am far from an economist. And
don't need to be. What do you think personally about what it does to personal responsibility, accountability, and going forward in our nation as far as building responsible citizens?
Well, I think there's always been a little bit of some policies in place that have given low-income people a leg up. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not these two particular policies are sustainable, I don't know. I haven't crunched the numbers. Nobody's let me in on the, you know, national debt and all that. So I think maybe it's a good idea that is taken in an extreme.
I don't understand. What do you mean by that?
I think that having incentives for people to buy homes and for people to get out of what might be some crushing student debt, because universities are charging a astronomical fee, especially for professional programs. I think some relief for people in that regard is a good idea.
Would it be unqualified relief? Like you didn't even have to graduate to get the relief. It didn't have to be in a particular area that's going to advance U.S. policy or even society in general. It can be on any degree you choose, whether or not that degree seems to contribute to the benefit of society.
I think if you don't graduate, that you should not be awarded graduation. Graduation. I think there should absolutely be some parameters on those awards and gifts. I don't know about choosing the degree. I think that's probably something that the person would have some latitude with.
Mm-hmm. So a fine arts degree would be the same as an engineering degree as far as qualifying for this student debt forgiveness.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, who's to say what's beneficial to the country or not, you know?
Right. Well, there's a lot of people that would say, but
well, that's true. Maybe there isn't.
I would say we need more engineers at this point. And fine arts, you already know you're going to be a starving artist. So let's get you started off on the right foot.
Starving.
Yeah. Cody, I'm interested. I know you're biting your tongue over here. What's your 2 cents?
I mean, I love it because it sounds like we're bribing the people with their own money. You know, that phrase has been said before. At the end of the day, we've had programs, and we still have programs, USDA programs for FHA programs to get people into homes. At the end of the day, it sounds like we're just trying to bribe people with their own money. Vote for this team. Because really, I don't think giving those handouts address the root issue mm-hmm. and solve any of the problems. And I'd be curious to know, like, Sean, you said you paid off your student loans. If you're to go and get your degree today, what would be the cost difference of when you first, you know, and today?
Yeah.
And that's really what the issue is. Like, it's not how much it's going to cost today, but how much are you making and how much are you taking home? And what does the cost of money look like today versus where it was 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I would have never imagined that I'd be making the income that I am now. Never in my wildest dreams. But at the same time, I would have never thought that a $100,000 house wouldn't be all I needed and more. And right now, $100,000 won't get you far on a house. And so the money's been diluted significantly. Inflation has done that. And redistribution of wealth can happen in a lot of different ways. One way is taxes, and that's a very obvious way. Another way that is a little bit more under the surface is inflation, because if the wealthy have their money diluted and there are handouts given to more of the poor, then money becomes more meaningless, and then there's more entitlement systems, then it's really you're redistributing the wealth in a way that isn't legislatively done, but it's done nonetheless. And so that, I think, is happening and has happened more severely in the past 3 years in this administration. And that's probably one of my biggest pet peeves with the administration, is the dilution of the buying power of the dollar. I can't, especially when it comes to just automobiles, homes, and even toys. You know, ATVs and boats are at least twice as much as they were pre-pandemic. Now you can blame it on COVID, but and in fact, I just called an office. I can't remember. It was one of the administrative offices of the government, and their recording was, due to COVID, there's a longer than usual wait time for return calls. And I was like, really? We're still blaming COVID for our inability to provide customer service? But yeah, so there is the COVID aspect of it, but there is also handling of it. And I think the inflation, we pumped too much money into the economy to blame COVID for everything that has been inflationary. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Don't miss out. Deason, Garner, and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar this October 11th at the Foothills Library. Doors open at 2 p.m., and we will start at 2:30. Achieve peace of mind and learn the importance of planning so you can avoid the consuming probate process.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner. I am an estate planning attorney. I help people get their affairs in order by organizing their finances and setting up plans that allow them to be managed in the event of incapacity and death with the least amount of government intervention. I'm not a huge fan of the government. In fact, I think the government is only there to ensure that my rights aren't infringed upon, yet I'm more and more convinced that the government is the one doing the infringing these days, and so I like to help other people avoid government interference in their personal affairs. With that in mind, we've got Susan Sorensen as a guest, and Cody Beeson is on the show, and what I want to talk about is, although it is about the election, which is very transient, I want to talk about something that's more long-lasting, and that is the divide between the parties in America today, and what it would take to convince an independent, if they're, you know, I know they're an endangered species these days, but what would it take to find an independent and convince them of one side or the other that they should vote either for the Harris administration and another 4 years of what we've had, or the Trump administration and another 4 years of what we saw previously? And so that's why you're on, Susan. You are the diamond in the rough.
Well, I may be a little rougher than you think, and maybe not exactly described as that. I would describe myself as a registered Republican, proud to be a Republican. I would describe myself as a religious conservative woman who is struggling.
That's already putting you in the crosshairs right there, but
that's okay.
Go ahead.
I'm okay with that. A religious conservative woman who is struggling with voting the party line this election. And it's been really hard for me to reconcile my personal, you know, views. I identify with all of the moral and economic ideologies that the Republican Party promotes.
So Roe v. Wade doesn't deter you from voting Republican?
I think
the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and let me get a little more specific, the fact that it was Trump-appointed justices that allowed or did the overturning of the Roe v. Wade decision, allowing the abortion issue to go back to the states. That doesn't offend you or deter you in any way from voting Republican?
No, I think that it should
be issue
in the power of the states.
Okay.
I think abortion should be left up to the state governments.
Okay.
And not, I don't consider abortion a constitutional right.
Can I find a policy, a defined agenda item of the Republicans that deters you from voting the party line, or is it more a name? And we're talking about Trump.
It's not the policies. It's not even necessarily Trump. It is what I feel tends to be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, while you're searching for the word, I think that people have a religious zeal with Trump, either a hatred, and I'm not going to vote for this guy because he's a maniac, or an absolute adoration. And I think both are wrong. I think that Trump is a lot of the things that people ascribe to him, an egomaniac, and so on. But I think that past performance is the best indicator of future actions, and I've very much enjoyed the Trump administration years as far as economically, world affairs, no new wars, not the threat of a nuclear war with Russia hanging over our head, the mass crisis that's going on in Israel right now. So those things I did like about Trump, although I'll tell you, I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. I voted for Trump in 2020, so I'm 0 for 2 right now. But did you think of the word?
Well, no, but I voted for Trump in 2016,
uh-huh.
And I also voted for him in 2020.
Interesting.
And But it wasn't until after January 6th that I did it in 2016. I voted.
Okay. So
hopeful.
That's the thing, January 6th. Cause I knew there was something that was really keeping you away from, voting strict Republican or for a Trump administration. And it's the insurrection on January 6th. Some people call it insurrection. I'll just be fair to the listeners out there. Other people call it a riot that occurred for a day that was a blight on, our society and generally civil disobedience in general, but it is nonetheless something. It was a skirmish. I don't know if it was an insurrection. You define it as an insurrection, though, right?
I would define it as one of the scariest things that I've seen in my lifetime, an unprecedented breach of our capital domestically. I mean, it's been breached by the British, but since then, not by anybody else. And this time it happened in our own country.
Yeah.
And that scares me. And I reluctantly voted for Trump in again, kind of held my nose and did it because of the party line. And then when that happened, it scared me enough. And things subsequently, how he handled that, and is still handling the aftermath of that is...
You mean the denial,
yes,
essentially.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay.
Is a huge factor in one of the factors why I will not be voting for him.
So it is a huge factor for you then? Maybe the defining factor?
It started as the biggest factor, but it...
Because of current actions or past actions reflect what we can predict in the future, and that he may not relent when he's done with his term if he were to be elected in 2024 and bow out when there's somebody else to take over the presidency in 2028. Is that a concern?
Yeah, the peaceful transfer of power is pretty important to me.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that he undermined that in a dangerous way is something that I can't ignore.
Yeah. So let me tell you what my viewpoints on it are. I think that I don't think that he instigated a coup. I don't think he actively coordinated a coup to overthrow the government. And that's what it's being portrayed as in the mainstream media. Now, was he okay with the riots? I think that he was, in general, okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they would have succeeded in their endeavor to stop the confirmation of the vote, then I think he would absolutely been okay with that, mm-hmm, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And would he have accepted the overturning of the election and taken another four terms? Absolutely. However, I also believe that there's quite a bit of evidence that doesn't get talked about fair enough, that there were irregularities, whether it be for COVID or whatever other reason, that caused enough doubt in the outcome to allow us to pause and postpone the confirmation of the vote. So there I am. I am an election denier, and I also don't believe that Trump was looking for a full-out coup, but I don't think he would have run away from it if one were handed to him.
Yeah, I agree with all of that, actually. I think that was well said.
So with that in mind, somebody like that is obviously not a George Washington, where he was given opportunity to take over more power, far more power than the colonies should have been willing to give him at the time, because they had just fought to get out from underneath the monarchy, and then they were considering going back into a monarchy, but with somebody who was an angel among men, George Washington. He was the most outstanding citizen. I think I've done a lot of history, and I think that I can't find a better, more noble person than him in our history. I wonder how we ever got fortunate enough to have him as our founding father, but then he is the standard that we now have, and it's hard to hold anybody up to that standard. I don't know of many men that would walk away from unlimited power given the opportunity.
Well, that's why we have elections and a peaceful transfer of power and a constitution, and all of that is to protect ourselves from men who don't want to hand over the power that they've been given.
So now very well said on your point, because we do have all of those protections, and we did see the transfer of power go peacefully. There was a one-day riot that resulted in no deaths directly for anybody working for the federal government, for the police. There was one person that died of a heart attack that day. There are five more people that died of suicide or other health-related issues after that, but not, they were not so directly coordinated to say that they were a direct result of the riot. Six people in total died on the side of the federal government trying to protect the Capitol. That, just the numbers in themselves, I don't think have been discussed very much on the mainstream media. So I think that our Constitution held up really well in requiring the transfer of power to occur as peacefully as could be hoped for in as a turbulent of an election as that was. So since it's worked already once, what makes you doubt that it'll work again if Trump is elected?
Well, I think a seed has been planted.
Okay.
And I think that I worry that if the election results are not what Trump hopes they will be, that there's been some doubt cast
in
already.
What year, 2028 or 2024?
This upcoming election.
Okay.
I'm worried that that seed that has been planted in the efficacy, I guess, of our election system, which is, I don't want to say sacrosanct, because, I mean, we all know that there's issues in elections. We all know there's mistakes made. It's not perfect, but we have to, as a people, believe that this process is a good process and that this will get us what we desire. And that is a president that is elected through the Electoral College by the people. And I am worried that because doubt has been cast on that process, it's going to happen again in a bigger, more potentially violent way.
Okay. Well, let me put to you a couple of scenarios and have you give me your opinion as to who is the bigger threat to democracy.
Okay. Bring it on. Cody, weigh in on this too.
So one is, in 2016, Hillary Clinton said that the election was stolen and that it was due to Russian disinformation. And that was put forward for 2.5 years. And there was even this whole dossier, this affidavit that was signed by multiple FBI agents confirming that Russia disinformation did cause and did interfere with the election. And therefore, it was not justly handed to Trump, but it was unjustly taken from Hillary. That doesn't seem to get the same publicity as election denialism, as Trump's argument that there was ballot stuffing and there was irregularities with the electronic vote count. Is there a double standard there?
Maybe, but I think the difference for me is I'm no fan of Hillary, make no mistake of that, but I think she handled it through the proper channels. I think she understands the Constitution maybe a little bit better than the Trump administration did, and did not call on the vice president to deny that certification, which Trump did press his vice president to do. So I think that might be the difference for me, is not the accusation necessarily, but the way that it was handled.
Okay. At the time that it occurred. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at two more scenarios. In Arizona, this is particularly relevant, where we had an election, and the election is overseen by the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State was running for governor. Now, as an attorney, I am very conscious of conflicts of interest. I cannot represent two individuals or be involved in a situation where I have a direct interest in the outcome of a matter that I'm handling.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pointed out to Katie Hobbs, who is acting as the Secretary of State, overseeing the election of the governor for which she was running, and she refused to recuse herself. Do you not see that as a threat to democracy?
I don't know anything about that, so I can't speak to that. So,
well, let's talk hypothetically. We'll come back. We got to take a break. This is Life, Death, and Law. We're going to talk about how we get to pure and equal fair elections.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar this October 11th at the Foothills Library. Doors open at 2 p.m. and we will start at 2:30. Achieve peace of mind and learn the importance of planning so you can avoid the consuming probate process.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason Garner and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We were talking off air, and we always get the best content off air. So, Cody, I'm going to bring it right back in with you.
Oh, mercy.
You and Susan were ganging up against me, and yep. I think that you're siding with Susan just because she's prettier, which yes, that is true. But
fact check that, somebody.
Yeah, no, it's 100% that fits. Anyway, you agree with her assessment of what happened on January 6th.
I mean, I agree with, in a way, both of you, in the sense that
have your cake and eat it too, Cody.
If it was really an insurrection, I think it would be a lot bloodier. I think if they really wanted to ramp up that rhetoric, that would have happened. But having sanctity for Congress, I can't get behind what happened. Thank goodness they didn't, breach the subway system. You know, it was only what it was, but at the end of the day,
wait a second. The subway system?
Yeah, there's a special subway system that takes you between.
Oh, like the underground
tunnel.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out, because I think a lot of our listeners would be confused about the subway system is more sacred than Congress.
No, Congress, the whole complex is saying.
I see the underground tunnels that they go through. Yes.
Shuttle between house buildings, and they didn't make it to the cafeteria underneath or anything. But point being is, okay, if you want to sit in Nancy Pelosi's chair, you better write a check to the DNC.
Right.
You don't get to just do that. You don't get to walk through the halls of Congress and do that.
Okay.
You need to grease the wheels.
Well, okay, but there's a lot of theories out there, and there are a lot of documents supporting those theories that the FBI plants within the crowd facilitated that breach or even prompted it.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, I think there were agent provocateurs there.
So,
right?
So although Trump did want a loud and ruckus crowd and probably wouldn't have objected to a riot of sorts, the actual breach of the Capitol itself seemed to be spearheaded by the deep state.
I don't know about it. It seemed to be by a lot of people that really didn't mind getting dirty and didn't mind going to jail. But a lot
so
of
so you think like the Proud Boys and
those kind of people,
those individuals actually organized and orchestrated this without the assistance, that it would have occurred regardless of any government agency involvement.
No, I mean, I don't know. That's so, we are so getting into like the conspiracy weeds now.
I agree with that.
Okay.
Yes, I do.
That's full-on conspiracy,
fringe,
and you got to wear a tinfoil hat to say it.
I think that the fringe would have perpetrated that without any help from whoever else you say was there.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been doing that. They've been going out
but
to
they would not have
with
done
Charlottesville.
Without Trump's provocation. Is that what you're saying? Because I don't think – I listened to that speech, and I don't think it was provocative.
I think
he wanted the crowds to petition. I think they wanted them to yell outside of Congress, and so Congress could see that there were a large number of people supporting the denial of the election, and give Trump or give Pence a little bit of support in carrying out Trump's request not to certify it. I think personally that's what he wanted, but I don't believe that, and I don't think that he would have totally been upset about them breaching the Capitol if he would have gotten the outcome, but the way that it turned out, obviously, no, and he did not call them off soon enough, but I don't think that they would have gotten past the Capitol doors without some inside plans. I think that the deep state did want that to happen. They did want it as a spectacle to show the through media channels, mainstream media channels, so Trump would be unelectable in future elections. That's what I think is the conspiracy. And yes, I am a conspiracy theorist, but so be it.
Well, I agree with all of that.
Do you really?
Well, except for the deep state involvement.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a big point. Okay.
I do think that Trump, I don't think that he wanted the Capitol to be breached. I don't think he had any intention of that happening. I don't think he planned that to happen.
Okay.
But I do think that he didn't call them off. I do think that he riled up an already very rileable crowd.
Yeah, they were fomenting.
Has a history.
They were jumping at the bit.
Yes, yeah. Of being willing to, like Cody said, get action.
Uh-huh. And so, and seeing how the country has reacted, that single event is probably the biggest stumbling block for, I think, a lot of people in voting for Trump. That would otherwise say, you know what, the Democrats have just gone too far off on the crazy train. And with all this woke business, and so, no, we've got to set the country back on a more moderate course. And so let's vote Republican this year. And then they look at the January 6th issues, and that, I think, has been played out masterfully in the media in helping people remember what power in the wrong hands could do or how fragile our democracy could be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but let's present another scenario then. And I'm not doing hypotheticals because I don't need to. I'm doing scenarios. So the Katie Hobbs non-recusal is not a threat to democracy. I think it is, just because if I'm running for the president of, let's say, the Bar Association, I don't know, this is maybe not a good example, but I'm also serving as the chair of a committee that selects how the election is orchestrated, then I think that's a conflict of interest that all the lawyers ought to point out. You're in violation of your ethical code, and not only should you not be able to participate, but just your unwillingness to recuse yourself should merit your disbarment. And so that, I think, is the same standard that the governor, the highest office of the state, should hold to herself. She can't run the election that is going to determine whether or not she holds the office. And so I think that is a threat to democracy. But the other one that I want to refer to is the handing over of the torch by President Biden to Kamala Harris to be the only candidate that is an option for the Democratic Party to vote for rather than to go through the primaries.
Well, I don't know.
Do you see that as an issue? Don't you see that as just as undemocratic?
Not really. I see that as more logistical. Honestly, I think that because the money was already there in her name. Would I like to see a different candidate? Probably. I'm not a huge fan of Kamala.
Maybe not even a candidate, but just the process of it all happening. Because I'll tell you that in October, well, even before that, if you listen to some shows in June and July of 2023, my prediction was it's not going to be Joe Biden on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. He will run as far as he can, and then he's going to hand off the baton, and he's going to do it in a way that will allow them to get across the finish line. And I thought it was going to be Gavin Newsom, and it didn't happen that way. Now, I didn't understand the campaign finance laws that Gavin Newsom couldn't have used all the campaign mm-hmm. funds that had been already dedicated to the
Harris-Biden campaign.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, the Biden administration and their campaign. And so I think that was a big factor. Also, I think that the identity politics had to do a lot with it. They didn't want a white guy running at the top of a Democratic ticket. They did not want that, and I think that had a big thing to do with it.
Maybe. I don't know if Gavin Newsom qualifies as your typical white male stereotype, though.
What do you think, Cody?
I mean, he is slick, but I mean, why didn't they do what they did in 2015 and just kind of award it like they did, you know, with Bernie's support? And when the convention came up in 2015, when it was Hillary and Bernie, and I mean, I think that's really why we saw Trump get elected, was they played some dirty politics on their inside, you know, their inside party at that time. Mm-hmm. And that ticked a lot of people off. And people either didn't come out and vote for Hillary, or they purposely voted for Trump because of that. So anyways, we've seen them do this kind of shenanigans in their own party years ago. So it wasn't really surprising when they pulled this card with Grandpa Joe.
Yeah. So the way that the nominee for the, not even the nominee, now it's the Democratic candidate for president, was appointed, anointed, if you would, then that doesn't cause any bells or alarms or whistles to go off?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not for me. Maybe would I have liked to see somebody else in there? Sure. I would have voted for them too.
Whoever was nominated is
probably
Bernie Sanders.
No, that would have been really hard.
Okay. Okay. So let's go down that rabbit hole a little bit. So Kamala Harris actually has, when you look at her voting record, she is actually further left, if could be possible, than Bernie Sanders. That means she's more socialist than Bernie Sanders.
Well, I would have to do my own research on that.
If that was true. Then would that change your mind?
Probably not, because I believe that executive power will be checked and that whatever, I guess, quote-unquote socialist policies she would promote would have a hard time getting through all the way.
So your faith in this three-tier system with the government powers being divided among the courts and the legislature is checking the president to the extent that further passage down this socialist or even communist passageway is not going to continue under her administration. I say further because I think that we've already gone down that trail. I think we're heading down that trail right now, speedily.
I think that if it does trend that way under her administration, it won't be to the extreme that maybe people worry about.
Okay, or so it's not something you can't write with the next election.
And I think that if Kamala does get elected, okay, let me say this. As a Republican, I'm voting for Kamala because I love my party. And I'm honestly doing this because I feel like I'm doing the right thing for the Republican Party by voting for Harris.
Because Trump has basically taken over the brand of the Republican Party and rebranded it in a way that is defaming it. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it's not the Republican Party that I believe in.
Uh-huh.
The direction that he's taking it.
Okay.
And that...
So you're voting against Trump. You're not voting for Kamala.
I guess that's a simplistic way to put it.
But would it be accurate?
Yes.
Okay. And I think there's a lot of people that are doing that. I think that at least 45% right out the gate are voting against Trump. So Kamala didn't have to get 50% of the vote. She only has to get like 4% of the vote. She should get 49%. She'll win the election. And she's already got 45% of the vote because people hate Trump so much. Do you agree with that, Cody?
Well, I mean, I agree with Susan, but... I'm voting for Trump, but I couldn't agree with you more. He's ruined my party, and I'm mad about it because it's not the same as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have to vote my party. But yeah, you're 1,000% right.
That's interesting because Adam is in love with Trump, and he thinks I ought to be in love with Trump too. And he thinks if I'd only meet the guy personally, I would be in love with Trump. And there are a lot of people out there that we're offending with this show. I mean, they are probably going to be canceling left and right on me. But that's okay because, you know, we can get 10 new listeners. Anyhow, we're going to say what we want to say. And that's because I think the biggest threat to democracy, and this is the point that I really want to go on, is that freedom of speech. And I think that the party that poses a greater impediment to freedom of speech is the Democratic Party. I think that there is a serious, serious threat that there will be censorship that will be institutionalized through social media with the Harris administration that is going to threaten our democracy more than we've ever experienced before. And regardless of what's happened with ballot stuffing or any electronic ballot issues, I think that it's free speech, and especially with AI and the way that they can do it on a mass movement way, so they can funnel out what type of speech is allowed to go through social channels, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Twitter, Google. We have had our Facebook page canceled twice, and it wasn't coincidentally on high water marks of the actual popularity of this show. When this show would hit some high water marks, we'd get canceled. When we got about 1,000 likes, we got canceled on our Facebook account for my law firm, not this show, but for my law firm. So I don't think that I'm just being shadow banned. I'm actually being banned. I'm being censored in my speech because of my political viewpoints, not because I'm saying anything hateful or anything that's even inaccurate, just because it is contrary to what the deep state agrees with. And I think that there's currently logarithms right now that are even, I mean, they're child's play compared to what AI can do in the future that can curtail speech. Does that not scare you?
Yeah,
or
but
do
I,
you believe that that's the case at all?
I believe that it goes on both sides. I don't think either side can accuse the other only of censoring things.
So you believe that censorship is coming from the right? That's interesting. I haven't actually even heard the argument, but I'd be very interested to look at any type of evidence to that. Elon Musk, he's got, you know, AOC still on his X page. He's got Nancy Pelosi still on his X, not page, but platform, and we'll call it Twitter for those of you that refuse to call it X. But and him taking that over, I think, was one of the most patriotic things that I've seen in my lifetime. For someone to spend that many $1 billion. No, it wasn't $1 billion. Sorry. It was, what do you buy it for? 60?
Like 55 million. 40,
yeah, 44 billion.
44. Oh, billion? It wasn't billion?
It was, yeah, it was 44 billion.
Whoa.
It's now worth about 9 billion.
Okay. So it was billion. Yeah. And so for someone to contribute that much of their personal wealth, I believe he saw it and it did it for the free speech aspect. And I think that in any other situation, in a 10 years ago scenario, he would be a Democrat. So would a lot of people that are now rallying around Trump. Russell Brand is one of those. Joe Rogan. A lot of these people that are out there, they're very popular in the media. They're like on the top five on the hit list for misinformation, actually would have been true blue Democrats 10 years ago. But it's the censorship issue that has caused them to flip. It's all the time we have, but I want to give you the last word. So if there were something that was the most persuasive to you in your decision to vote, what would that one thing be? Respect for the peaceful transfer of power, is that it, or is it something bigger?
That would be pretty big.
Yeah, that doesn't get much bigger than the peaceful transfer of power.
And he hasn't given me a lot of faith in his ability to surround himself with intelligent non-yes men.
Okay.
He's already gone through what, 44 cabinet members?
Uh-huh.
And somebody please fact check me.
I'm not saying uh-huh because that's correct, but I'll
sure
take your word for it. Sure.
Not the majority of his cabinet members are not backing him in this election.
Uh-huh.
So for people that have worked with him, have seen his leadership style at the highest levels, I don't know who else. I'm sure there's intelligent people out there that are Trump supporters. I know there are. I'm friends with a lot of them. And but I worry that he is going to surround himself with yes men that won't check his power,
his ego, and his hunger for power. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is probably true. Although it looks like Elon Musk would have a place in administration, and I don't think Elon Musk is going to take orders from anybody. And there was somebody else, I forget. Do you remember somebody else? RFK. That he was going to give a prominent position over probably the Department of Health.
Interesting.
And I think Elon Musk was, he was coined in for the Department of Energy.
Hmm.
And I think that would be brilliant. I mean, you got this solar guy, you know, he founded Solar City and he's got Tesla. And you're putting him in over the Department of Energy, that shows some trust that, you know, he's not going to go full on for fossil fuels. Although I totally agree with fossil fuels, but Elon Musk is going to look at the big picture.
He's a smart guy.
He's a smart guy. Okay, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me.
Yeah, this is Life, Death, and Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.